Hello and welcome to the Magical Learning Podcast for this week. This week, you may have noticed already that this is one of our longest podcasts. This is an amazing conversation about Aboriginal inclusivity in Australia, not just at the workplace, but everywhere. What a great conversation with Dr. Connie Hansen and Felicity Chapman. I hope you take away as much from it as we did. It was a really good one. Really enjoyed this one, and you'll see that it even brought some emotions out of people in the ML team. So I hope you enjoy that aspect of it as well. Great conversation. I hope you love it. Have a magical week. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Magical Learning Podcast today. Before we kick off, I'd actually love our guest, Felicity Chapman, to give us a lovely acknowledgement of country. And also, Felicity, thanks so much for being on today.
Thank you. So I would like to pay my respects to the traditional custodians on the unceded lands on which we meet today. I am calling in today from Wiradjuri country. I would like to honour the elders and the custodians, their continuing connection to sacred land and sea countries, their totems and song lines. And I also pay my respect to elders past, present and emerging. And thank you for letting me be part of this podcast.
Awesome. Thank you for that, Felicity. That was great. And we'll get to who you are in a second. But let's jump around and catch up with the team and see how they're going today. Graham, how's your week been?
Hi, Jez. Hi, everyone. Yeah, I've had a great week. Thank you. We've been at home for most of the week, and the weather is phenomenal today. The sunrise this morning was brilliant. We went for a walk early, still just gorgeous blue skies and no rain. So immensely grateful for that. So I'm really good. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, Graham. And good to see the weather's starting to get good. I know it is here in Melbourne as well, which is very exciting for all of us. John, how are you going this week?
Very good, Jess. Welcome, everyone. Look, having the sun out today is just fantastic rather than the rain we commenced the week with. And I think we're even going to get a sunny day tomorrow before rain hits us again on Sunday.
Beautiful. And how's things been this week otherwise for you, John?
It's been a bit slower, which has been really nice, which has been fantastic. Actually, it's great to slow down this week as opposed to the last couple of weeks, which were just flat out.
Yeah, well, good to hear that for you, John, and we're glad you're being able to just relax a little bit now. So that's great. Danette, how are you going this week?
Yeah, Jez, had a great week, and just wanted to share with Felicity that we're also in Wiradjuri country as well. So our favourite part of the world. We've been at home all week, as Graham said, which has been awesome. Really feeling for all the people who've been flooded around our area. There's been lots of flooding in the Murrumbidgee and the creek near us. And other than that, like everyone, seeing some sunshine, I've been out in the garden and picking some fruit today. So some lemons and lemonades, which is awesome because we're going to make some marmalade this weekend, which is pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
And how was your week, Jez?
Yeah, pretty busy this week. I feel like I've had a lot on. Some people, I don't know if there's any freelancers that listen to this, but a lot of people have mentioned that they've seen me in this weird Instagram ad that I shot a while ago, which was for a freelance tax help company. So if you have seen me, feel free to sling it to me. But yeah, that's been my week pretty much. Let's check in with Felicity. How are you going this week?
Oh, look, I'm going great. It's been snow, which has been a bit of a challenge. Like, I left the wet Sundays 4 weeks ago and it was very warm up there, and coming down here and having to wear three layers of clothes, I love winter, but not in November. But no, it's lovely to be home and being able to play with the eucalypts. It's been beautiful.
Well, yeah, hopefully that weather gets a little warmer for you there, Felicity. That does sound pretty frustrating to go backwards in weather, I guess. And Connie, how are you going this week?
Yeah, I'm going really well. Since we're on the weather, I must say I am very disappointed with what is supposed to be spring because it just doesn't feel like it. I'm ready to head up to the Whit Sundays and hang with Felicity where it's a little bit warmer.
Yeah, I think that sounds like a good idea for all of us. So Felicity, let us know when we can pop in. That would be great. Awesome. Well, so the two voices you've just heard are Felicity Chapman and Dr. Connie Henson. And we're so happy to have you both on today. It's really exciting. Now, this week, actually, before we get into anything, maybe I might just start with you, Felicity. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself for people that maybe just being introduced to you for the first time via the Magical Learning Podcast today?
Lovely. Well, thanks, Jess. So my name is Felicity Chapman. I was born on Wiradjuri country in Bathurst, and I've lived up in the West Sundays on Nauru country for the last 20 years. I am a descendant of the Stolen Generation. So grew up without my culture. And about 5 years ago, after suffering a massive brain bleed, the brick walls around my Aboriginal family tree research sort of fell down, and finally got to connect with family. And so the gift out of the bleed was actually being able to connect with my culture. I'm a weaver and I'm a university student. I can be really feisty. You know, it's always a bit scary when people offer to give me a microphone and a soapbox, because you just never know what's going to come out. I have three boys. I have two gorgeous grandkids. And my background is health construction business. I've done a quite diverse range of roles over the years, but weaving and connecting with mob is my passion.
Thank you so much for that, Felicity. And that is going to be awesome. We're so happy to have you on today. We can't wait to hear what you've got to say about all this. It's going to be a great chat, I think. And Connie, would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself as well for people that may be being introduced on the Magical Learning Podcast today?
Yes, well, I'll give you a little background. So as you can probably tell by my accent, I was not born on this country, but I have had the privilege to live on Gadigal country for the last 23 years. And it is absolutely my home now. I felt very welcomed here. Very included is our topic today, to be a part of this place. So my background is I recently shifted back to academia. I started out in academia as a psychologist many, many years ago, and then made a little detour for a few years into business, and spent a lot of time running a leadership development and change facilitation company. And then, about 2 years ago, decided that what I really wanted to do was spend my time in research, and particularly around health research and working in along with and partnering with older Aboriginal women. And that has been a most wonderful and rewarding experience, intellectually stimulating, and it's just been good. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And it really is an absolute pleasure for us to have you both on today. Also wanted to thank you for both being our first joint guests ever. So this is exciting as well. So we're really happy to have you both on. Now, when I asked what topic you both wanted to talk about today, you sent through a little paragraph, so usually we get a little like snippet, but you sent through a paragraph. And the perfect thing about that is it gave us so much to work with when it came to what questions we could ask, because it gave us such a broad sort of topic area to talk about, which I was so happy with. So thank you both for that. As you mentioned, Connie, it's got a little bit to do with inclusion, but I did actually just want to read it out a little bit because I wanted to give the audience a full idea of the full scope that we had to work with. So we just chatted about and are keen to talk about inclusion, especially inclusion of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in all aspects of Australian life. We work in health research and are focused on how Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander women use digital health. So I thought that was really fascinating, and it gave us such a broad leaping off point. So without further ado, before we get into the topic, we actually have an ML recommendation. And this is, of course, a topic where a little segment where we talk about something that one of our team members has read, watched, or experienced this week and wants to just give a quick talk about. So Graham is doing our ML recommendation before we jump into the podcast today. So Graham, what is your ML recommendation?
Thanks, Jess. Yeah, the universe sometimes just makes you stop and pay attention to stuff. So Danette and I were in a bookstore a fortnight ago, and we usually go into Danette's buys 10 books, and I might buy one or two. This leapt out at me from the shelves. It's called Dark Emu by Australian Aboriginal author Bruce Pascoe. It is humbling, embarrassing, and such a powerful story about some of the truth behind colonization of Australia and some of the things that happened in the civilization that we trashed when we showed up. And if I could recommend a book of the century for people who have any interest whatsoever in what Australia really was before we got here, it's this. It's amazing. That's it. Dark Emu, please go and buy a copy and read it. It's so important.
Mm. And that was our ML recommendation. And you'll be able to check that out in the link below. We'll link that so you can go just into the description of this podcast and check that one out. I think Graham, that leads us to I think that's a great recommendation. And I think it also leads into your first question today. So I might keep the microphone with you today. And you just want to talk a little bit about your question for Connie and Felicity and maybe about why you chose it as well.
Sure. Thanks, Jess. So again, you know, reading the book was such an eye opener in so many ways. And it got me to thinking about, you know, in this broader sort of context of inclusion, respect, acknowledging what was here before white Europeans arrived. But also sort of looking at where we're at in terms of Australian peoples today and their understanding of what has happened in the past. And the fact that understanding is flawed, because there's so much of what existed in Australia before we turned up that has never been shared, has never been discussed, it certainly has never been taught in schools. So we have a lot of people who are not of Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander heritage or background, to have a very sort of skewed or distorted understanding of history. And my question was, how do we start, or what are your thoughts on how we shift their thinking to just, you know, start by considering that maybe their understanding of Australia's history is not complete in any way, shape or form. How do we get them to start at least considering that, so we hopefully can then bring some of them into conversations about how we change the way we think about, the way we talk about, the way we write about Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander people in their relationship to Australia. Sorry, it was a very long-winded question, but I think hopefully you get some gist from that.
So it is a really challenging question. It's really hard, and it really starts with telling the truth. When I went to school, we were brought up to believe that Aboriginals were savages and they were nomads. They never talked about how we respected the environment. We had a very detailed, you know, community structure. We were well. We knew how to utilize the environment around us, but at the same time, support it and protect it and take only what was needed. Everything that we did on the planet, we do with ceremony and respect. There's this really beautiful Wiradjuri word called Yinda Yamara, and it means to go softly, go gently, go slowly, and do everything with respect. And there are lots, you know, and people tend to think of Australia as being, okay, you're Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander. You have to stop thinking of us as being one country. If you got the map of Europe and you multiplied it over the map of Australia, that gives you a better understanding of the diversity of the culture and the language within our Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander culture. But we do have similar core beliefs, which is about community. You know, we are the custodians of the environment. You know, if we don't support Mother Nature, then we will die out. Because we can't keep raping and pillaging all our resources and think that, you know, we're going to continue on this planet.
Thanks, Felicity.
Connie, did you want to say anything about that?
I would like to add something. And thank you, Felicity. I love that that phrase. I've heard you say it before, and it's just so beautiful and I think instructive for how to live. I think starting, like, we have to kind of sadly start where we are, where we don't know a lot. Even people who, you know, I'm new to Australia, of course, but even people who've lived here their whole lives don't know the truth about what was here and how it was, and the people who've been a part. And even the simple things, like you talked about, Felicity, of knowing that there's not just one Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, that there are, you know, quite a few different groups of people with their own quite specific cultures and their own specific ceremonies and protocols and ways of being. And it's so rich and diverse. And I think that's been the thing that I have been privileged to feel like I'm getting an education through the work I'm doing and with, through the women, Felicity being one, and other women that I work with, and some men. I've got a few men in there, but mostly older Aboriginal women who are generously providing me an education to know not just what was, but what is, because this is a, you know, Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander art history, there is a long history, but it's a contemporary, current, rich, wonderful culture that, you know, is like we should be celebrating because there's just so much there.
Awesome. Thank you both so much for that. That's a great response, and it's what a great chat we're having today. Graham, did you have any follow-ups, or how are you going?
I think I'll hold off until just to give some of the others opportunity to share their questions. But yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thank you both so much. I might go to John now. John, what was your question and what inspired it today?
Yeah, well, my question, I guess, looking at the Deadly Weavers and the, to me, those things are important. I had the privilege, and I do absolutely believe it was a privilege, of teaching on Bathurst Island back in 91. So I was 21 years old, or 2021, I can't remember, 21. And up there, you know, thousands of kilometres from home, no network. And I was, you know, embraced into the community that was the Tiwi people, which was just phenomenal. And teaching fourth grade kids, but learning a lot about the culture that I had absolutely no idea about, being white European. But so my question's around, I learned that Indigenous people utilise storytelling a lot to pass on significant practices and events, and, you know, they're continually passed down. Felicity, you talked about using digital health. I think it was you, one of you ladies, talked about digital health at the beginning. How do we pass on those practices? How do we maintain those practices? You know, we're now living in a culture that's very westernised and industrialised, and moving away from the community. And even my mother tells stories of growing up, and around the corner was Auntie such and such, and down the road, you know, next door was Uncle such and such and their family. And we're moving away from those communities. But how do we hold on to those practices that, you know, that have been thousands of years being passed through communities? In such a digital world or such an industrialized world?
Thanks, John, for that question. That is a very diverse question. So to start off with, yes, we were oral tradition. That's how we passed on our knowledge down. The biggest problem through to colonization was the forced relocations. Yep. The massacres, the white assimilation policies. Yep. So it wasn't that, you know, we were asked to conform. We were actually forced to actually not continue on our cultural practices or our language, because at least you would be punished. At worst, you would be killed for it. And so there's broken chains, and for some of the more remote communities, they've managed to maintain the strength of that chain as they pass down. For a lot of us who are still trying to find our home countries, sadly, we actually have to rely on the colonized practice of actually getting access to collections in museums, reading white anthropologists' reports on when they went in to observe the savages, you know, back in the 1800s, for us to actually understand some of our cultural practices. But there is a growing groundswell amongst our generations that we're not going to let our culture die. And so we are very focused on revitalizing those cultural practices, because what everybody forgets is we can be the leaders to actually heal the world, because we've got 60,000 years of knowledge and experience, and it sits deep within our DNA. And it's finding those ways that we reactivate that DNA and then actually give more the space and the resources, and removing the red tape and the bureaucracy and the white missionary, I've come to save you. Get that out of the way, and we can create a really amazing world for everyone, and, you know, and protect the earth. So we make sure that, you know, seven generations down are still going to have a viable existence on this planet. But it's hard, because the amount of red tape that an Aboriginal person has to go through to actually get access to that information is terrible. So there needs to be a lot of work done, and the Labor government seems to be doing a lot to start building those pathways for us to make it easier. And I'll hand over to Connie.
Thank you, Felicity. I'm going to approach that question a little bit differently, because one of the things, and Dark Emu was actually an eye-opener for me as well, Graham, and other things, to recognize the science that has been part of this continent, and the scientists that have been here. And so sometimes when people think about non-Aboriginal, people think about Aboriginal Torres Strait Islanders, the first word they come to is not science or technology, but it should be. It should be one of the first ones, because there have been so many scientists on this land of all different kinds. And then we're starting to realize a little bit about the environmental, but there's many, many kinds. I have a colleague, and her work is in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander medicine, mineral medicines. And so when I got interested in this work, the people said, what, digital health, the Aboriginal people, is that right? It's like, absolutely. In fact, one of the things that our research has already told us is that older Aboriginal women are keen users of technology, as are the men, but women even more so. And 90% of a group of, this is in remote and regional areas, 90% want to use health trackers, you know, wearables. And, you know, people are using social media. Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander medical practices were the first to put, in Australia, to put health information online all those numbers of years ago. So when we think about how do we keep that history, those stories, that kind of way of knowing things, it's like, well, we, of course, you know, some of it will remain oral history, but some of it will come into the digital way of sharing things as well. And if we are smart enough to make sure we are really inclusive, then we're going to see that evolve in ways that will be absolutely beautiful. Felicity and I have a colleague, I'm just going to go in just for a quick second, works with this colleague who's a lovely woman who runs a business that looks at virtual reality. She's an Indigenous woman, and virtually everybody that works for her is Indigenous. And what they're doing is they're taking the stories from the elders, from the old people, and they're having the kids then program and build those out in a virtual reality. And to me, that's just like yet one more example of the technology, the science that's always been there and how it's going to look in the future, how it's evolving.
And one of the advantages of social media is because we are such a diverse geographical country, it allows us to create new networks and develop that different community. So, and it simplifies the way that we can communicate with each other. And in doing so, we're rebuilding that knowledge trust.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thank you both so much for that. And that's a that's a great way to look at it, and really interesting to see how you were both talking about that. That's awesome. Connie, you were talking about inclusion, and I might jump on to Danette's question now because I think it's related to that. So Danette, what was your question, and tell us a little bit about why you picked it?
Okay, so I've actually got a two-parter, and I'll start with the first part and then bring in the second part. Yeah, I love the whole concept of inclusion, and I really would love both of your perspectives on, firstly, why it is so important. And then we'll get to the second part of my question.
Okay, so I suppose my first thing is, and I'll just, a bit of a heads up, when I saw that question, it triggered a little bit of stuff, because when we don't have inclusion, a perfect example of what actually happens is look at what happened to Cassius Turvey. Mm. And then you have a police commissioner going, oh, wrong place, wrong time. And it's like, seriously? How can you just push it aside as if it's nothing? And that is a perfect example. And when we don't embrace inclusivity. To give you inclusivity from a visual perspective, a white tapestry is really boring. Imagine what it starts to look like when you start to build in all these different colored threads and sizes and shapes, and just see how the diversity of opinions and ideas and cultural knowledge being woven as different threads into that piece. Just imagine the beauty of it. And that is what inclusion is. I mean, just one single monocolor? Nah, very boring.
I've never heard it described that way, Felicity, and what a beautiful, beautiful image. So thank you.
And also, Felicity, I love how your brain works, that it's also a weaving metaphor. It's like, it's perfect. I love that. It's beautiful. Connie, if you wanted to add anything.
It's hard to follow up after something so beautiful. So I would just want to add a little bit. My background is before as a psychologist, and just kind of how our brains work has always really interested me. And one of the things that we know that science has told us is that we are social beings. Human beings are social. We need each other. And when we exclude, we damage the excluded and the excluder. Neither one of us can be happy with exclusion. And some really interesting neuroscience around inclusion, when we include people, for the includer and the included, we literally make people smarter. People absolutely can think more clearly and have better learning and memories when we focus on inclusion. It's built, Felicity talked earlier about what's built into our DNA. Human beings, we're all built that way. And so it's crazy to not include. It's like doing ourselves a disservice.
Thank you, Connie. And totally, like I don't get why we don't include. And so my next part was really to start to explain the impact of not including. So what is that impact that happens when we don't include Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in all aspects of our lives?
So I'm actually going to ask you, how would you feel if you were not allowed to dream big, decide what you would really love to do and actually follow that path. And in wanting to follow that path, there were so many brick walls put up in front of you. How would you feel? How would you react? How would your body be? How would your emotions be?
So my answer, Felicity, would be it would be utterly shit and so unfair. Pardon my language.
Yeah. And then because you're sitting in that space, you're starting to, that's the start of trauma.
Mm.
And it's not, it doesn't just affect you, but it affects your family, your community. And it's not only the current generation, because you're actually modifying your DNA. So then that gets passed on to the next generation until it gets to that generation where that one person goes, no, this changes. I need to be the change. So when we don't have an inclusive society, you have people who are unwell, you have racism, you have poorer financial economic outcomes, environmentally, you have negative outcomes, and across all spectrum of health, whether it's emotional, spiritual, mental, physical, there are always negative outcomes.
Thank you, Felicity. Beautiful questions too.
Yeah, thanks so much. And Connie, did you want to add anything to that?
I think what I would add is the, you know, if the question is what happens if we exclude, what happens if we don't include? I'm going to look at the upside. What happens if we do include? What happens if we, you know, as the whole of Australia, suddenly take the incredible pride that we should in our history of being a, you know, to be able to live on a continent that has a continuous culture and civilization for more than 60,000 years? How amazing is that? It's almost kind of like a no-brainer, like, why wouldn't we? Why wouldn't we? This is just, you know, it's just all too good to not.
Thank you, and Connie.
Yeah, thanks so much for that. And just on that, I just kind of wanted to share a quick experience from this week. So I went to the vigil for Cassius in Melbourne here. And I'm not really a spiritual person, but I definitely wanted to be supportive. And when I went, there's something really interesting happened, which was the event ended. And then it wasn't raining, but then about 2 minutes after it ended, a huge rainbow, incredibly visible, was there. And then it just disappeared. And I was honestly sort of floored by that. So that's also something that I think, you know, there's so much power in sort of things that happen around here. So anyway, that was for me, a very amazing experience. But I wanted to maybe jump onto my question here, which is that because I thought when I think about diversity sometimes and hiring and stuff, sometimes I think it ends there where they just hire diverse and they don't think, how can we incorporate this better into the business? So I guess for me, I just wanted to talk about, outside of just hiring diversely, how can businesses become more inclusive in practices and culture?
I'll let Connie start with this one.
All righty. Well, I will put my thoughts out there. Look, I think to me, it's like you talked about diversity, and just getting the diversity is not inclusion. And I think in Australia and in a lot of places, we kind of focused on diversity for a while, but then we have a more diverse group of people around us, but then we don't let them be who they are. We don't celebrate that diversity. We don't, as you know, using Felicity's beautiful example, we're not weaving with all the colors and shapes and sizes and things that are possible. And so I think we have to change our practices. We have to change the way we out each other and work with each other. And we have to make a space for different ways of thinking, talking, and being. So that people of all different backgrounds can feel safe and comfortable and confident putting forward their unique ways of seeing and doing and being.
And one of the most off-putting things is when you have businesses talking about diversity, it often comes down that it's legislated, like equal employment opportunity. Remember, that was a really big thing in the 90s where you'd have to do these statistics every month to prove how many women that you were employing. And it's becomes this ticker box. I can tick a box. This opens me up to more funding. There's nothing more discouraging than employing somebody because you want to meet a quota, but then you don't actually embrace what that person brings to the business. They're not heard. They're not valued. And so you'll find that you'll actually have a greater staff turnover because you're not actually embracing them. I really love the focus of human-centered design. You know, it's having that heart-to-heart connection and actually being really open to understanding that there are different ways of doing things. It may not be the fastest. Sometimes it's not the most economically efficient, but the value it adds, not just to your product, your service, it's added to the community that you're supporting. So for an example, Supply Nation did a study, I think about 3-4 years ago, and for every dollar that is invested in an Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander owned business, there is a flow-on value of $4.41 for every dollar spent back to the community. And it's also inspiring. So people with a disability, so I live with a disability, you know, and being able to adjust the way that I work so I can still contribute, because people want to contribute. You know, they want to be able to be involved and make a difference in their capacity. And that's why I think diversity at all levels is so important.
Yeah, and Felicity, I think even on that, it's that idea also when you're talking about it may not be like immediately the most economic, but also it may cover other things that you weren't thinking about when you start bringing these extra ideas in, may bring in different types of people to different things that are, you know, customers. So, and you can help out more people as well. So yeah, I think that's a great insight and hopefully people take that away as well. I might jump onto Kanika's question, which is, what are some great examples of inclusion you've seen and what made them so good?
From a business perspective, a really good model of inclusivity I saw is how I actually met Connie, and that is through a women's business network, which is going global, called CEO. And it was celebrating women together and all the knowledge and wisdom that, and their unique perspective on the world that they bring together. But the money that we pay for membership is actually invested directly into women-led enterprises. And everyone's welcome at the table. And I think that one, and you know, and because I met Connie, so of course it worked really well, because she has to put up with me now.
Lucky for me. I just want to, you know, since you've given that example, Felicity, I'm going to follow up on, there's a, in this organization, they're actually changed their name now to Coralis, because it, you know, it is around our connection with each other. But one of the things that they have underlying principles that are different than our typical market economy, and one of them is the principle of radical generosity. They start from that principle, and I love that idea. It's like, what if rather than competition, it's how do we help each other? How do we share the resources that we have? And I think it's just a beautiful example. I'm so glad you put that one out there, Felicity, because there's many, many examples of, like, we don't, just because things are a way doesn't mean they have to stay that way. We can change the principles that underlie how we do business.
Yeah, and I think even just talking about that as an example shows that, you know, including different ideas, you can end up with things like radical inclusivity and radical, you know, helping each other out. So I think just even being able to change the whole idea of what we're thinking about and changing the whole system is kind of some of the ideas that I guess come out. So I love that. I was just thinking we might end here on Alan's question, which I think the general question was a bit more about like, I guess sort of from colonial history, there's a lot of things in that culture about wanting more and more and more and more, and there's no sort of end in sight. But the Aboriginal cultures here were so good at sustaining what was here and, you know, obviously living with it for 60,000 years, maintaining it, keeping it together. So I guess the question was, is there something that we can learn about being more content with enough?
Yeah, well, everything's sort of driven towards that fast fashion, fast food. And we've had generations of being influenced by media and big marketing companies that you're not happy until you have this. I often think for people, go out camping. Get yourself back out into the bush where there is no distraction. And you start to see the world in a different way. And then realize that often less is actually more. And it's a bit of a hard one because, yes, we need the economy to keep rolling. But wouldn't it be lovely, rather than us spending money on stuff that eventually goes into landfill, that we actually invest in community-led enterprises so everybody gets to celebrate? With people, you know, and let's get rid of homelessness. You know, in a country, why are there homeless people? And it's diverting the way that we spend our money into things that actually make a long-term positive difference to whole of community. But you need a really good marketing agency to start to re-educate the people in a way that they'll be wanting to come on board.
Sorry, go, Connie.
Oh, I was just going to jump in. It's like that idea, you know, we spend the money on the things that we think we're going to want that are going to make us happy. But really, it's just a continuous treadmill of you need another one, you need another one, and you need a different one. And I mean, to your point, Phyllis, too, it's like, let's just stop. Let's just stop and think what, you know, it's like the times that are most happy for me is when I'm with a colleague, when I'm with a friend, and we're just having a talk and we're just with each other. And it's just a very peaceful time. And it's like, you know, that you don't buy that. You just do it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, thank you both so much for this chat today. What a great chat. So insightful. And I've learned so much, and I can't wait to take a lot of these things away from this as well. I might just go around the group and just grab some final thoughts from everyone. So Graham, final thoughts on the chat today.
Thanks, Jess. I'd love the Felicity. I wanted to say thank you for sharing some of the vision or visions, the idea of weaving the tapestry, but also reminding me that because I, like a lot of other people, fall into the habit or the trap of thinking about Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people as one nation. And as you rightly point out, it's the exact opposite of that. So, I remember seeing, and I think it was on at the IATSIS building in Canberra, so that Australian Institute for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Studies, and they had a language map. So the map of mainland Australia, I can't remember whether Torres Strait was there, hopefully it was, but it pointed out the different nations, the different languages, et cetera, which was staggering at the time. So for me, one of the things is, again, how do we sort of shift the way people think about Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders to it is an incredible collection of nations. And all of their individual cultures and language, and Connie's point about science and technology, and you know, before we got here and trashed the place, we being white Europeans, you had nations that existed and thrived for, you know, 40, 50, 60,000 years, and we managed to ruin the place in just a couple. It's staggering. So I thought I had a question, but I'll just shut up now. But thank you both for being part of the conversation today. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks for that, Graham. John, I'll go to you now. Any final thoughts on the conversation today?
Yeah, for me, it was the last bit of the conversation talking about the relationships and how we need to, or how we can be better at that. And that the idea of the human-centered design has struck or has resonated with me. How do we not just tick a box to say, yes, we've got another female, or we've got another Indigenous, or another whoever they are? How do we actually get them and celebrate them as an individual? And I think for me, it's very much that human-centered design, and not just design of a product, but celebrating the individual that we have in front of us.
Awesome. Thanks for that, John. I appreciate that. Danette, final thoughts on the conversation today?
Wow. An amazing conversation. I hope, Felicity, that every person asks those questions that you asked me about the dreams, about the brick walls and stuff like that, because everyone needs to understand how it feels when they're not included. And one of the things I've always loved about Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people is that whole sense of community. So Western world is about individual. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander is about community. And the way forward cannot ever be individual, because there's winners and there's losers. Community is about including everyone. And yeah, I remember reading recently that uranium mining and creating nuclear waste and that sort of thing, and nuclear energy, is seen as a positive to GDP. And some of the stuff we've been talking to is not even acknowledged in GDP. And if you think, the whole dialogue of where do we go next is, we need to change a lot of what we've focused on in the past and seen as success, which actually is not sustainable, and it isn't really success either. So I have tears in my eyes because this was such a beautiful, deep conversation. So bless you to both of you for being part of this conversation, and thank you.
Yeah, and I agree with everything that everyone said here today. I think there's just so much to walk away with from this conversation. I'll also just grab some final thoughts from you, Connie.
First, to thank you for inviting us to be part of this conversation and to share with your listeners. I want to say that as long as I have known Felicity, she never ceases to surprise me and amaze me. And so often, it's not just what she says, but how she says it. And yet another beautiful weaver's example, which I have heard many, and every time I just walk away, because it puts a picture in my mind, and it's worth a million words. So I thank the group, and I thank you, Felicity.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Connie, and thanks for being on. And Felicity, any final thoughts on the conversation today?
Look, I thank you all for the invitation, and also being so open just to hear a different point of view. And then I just ask your listeners to actually go out and educate yourself. Please read the Uluru Statement and start to understand we're actually not the enemy, you know, but we can make such positive change if we're given the opportunities to actually lead the change. And thank you.
Yeah, and thank you both so much. And thank you to everyone on the call today. And I'll put a link to the Uluru Statement also in the podcast description, so you can just jump straight onto that. I want to thank everyone on the call today. This was such a great chat. It's also going to be one of our longest podcasts ever, so I think it's a perfectly deserving podcast for that. And also Felicity and Connie, I want to thank you both for being our first joint guests. This was such a great conversation and just added two perspectives to a great topic. I want to thank you both for choosing the topic, and to everybody that's been listening and sharing and stuff, we want to thank you all for that. And as always, everybody, have a magical week.
Yeah.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Thanks, Felicity. Thanks, Connie.
Thank you.
Yes.
Bye-bye. John.